All right, so I was by my father-in-law's when I just had gotten married, and I was back for the week before Pesach. I came back from Eretz Yisrael. I got married about 2.5 months earlier, and there was a guy at his shul who was very big into asking weird, whacked-out questions. And he asked me all the weirdest questions you've ever heard. For example, he asked me, in this week's Parsha, how many times does it mention Hashem's name? Does anybody know? I didn't. And he yelled at me. He asked me, what was the first Rashi by heart in this week's Parsha? I didn't know. He yelled at me. Out of 12 questions that he asked me, the most inane questions you have ever heard before in your life, only one of them did I get right. The question was, how many Pesukim are in this week's Parsha?
96.
Very good.
I thought it was 96.
It's Parshas Tzav, and Parshas Tzav, there are 96 Pesukim altogether. 96 Pesukim altogether. So everybody asks, what's up, Shopping at 96? Why you have 96? Now, at the end of every Parsha, after it tells you how many Pesukim there are in the Parsha, it gives a simon. It gives you a simon. That simon is all the way at the end, and it says, Tzav. You know what the simon is in this Parsha? Come, grab two chairs and sit down. You know what the simon is? The simon is the word Tzav. The word Tzav. That works out really well, right? You got a simon of Tzav in the Parsha of Tzav. It's the only Parsha that's like that. The only Parsha in which the word equals up the amount of Pesukim that there are on the Parsha. And it's just strange why in the world. There's a whole lot of places. There's 97 because of the Sower. There's really 97. What's going on here? All right. There's a klipa. I don't normally like the demonic view. I like doing malachim at the beginning of the parsha. But there's a demon by the name of it's a klipa in Asiya. When you do something, it makes you do things for the wrong reason. Its name is Tzav. That's the name of that demon that makes you do things for the wrong reason. Chazal say, Ein Tzav el Lashon Avodah Zarah. Whenever it says the word Tzav, it refers to Avodah Zarah, which means it wants you to do things for the wrong reason. By Avodah Zarah, it's Avodah, it's work, but you're doing it for the wrong reasons. You're doing it for the entire wrong reasons. That's this klipa. This shade makes you work for the wrong reasons, and it feeds off one thing that you do. The name of God, which is Kel, Aleph Lamed, Adnus, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. That name of, you're allowed to say it because it's in the middle of learning, that name of El Adonoi, which you say, gives it a little bit of food. It's considered like the food for that shade which keeps it going. Tzav is metakin all that. This parsha of Tzav is metakin everything. Why? Because it's telling you how to give korbanos. What korban does it talk about in the beginning of Tzav? Anybody know? The Ola. Why the Ola over anything else? Because the Ola is the only avoda where the Kohanim get absolutely nothing from. They get nothing from it. Okay, you get the Or, you get the skin. But you get nothing from the Korban itself. The Korban is pointless. They don't get any meat from it. They don't get any Hanah from it. They don't do anything with it. Every other Korban they eat. The Chatas and Asham, they eat themselves. By the Shlamim, the Toda, they get something out of it. By every other Korban, there's something. The Mincha, they get something out of it as opposed to anybody else. But an Ola, they get absolutely nothing. So why would they bring an Ola? What's the shot in the Ola? The Ola is an Asiya. It's a Maisa, a doing, something that he did that's purely for God. So in Tzav, which is a Lashon of a Tikkun that you're doing for a shade, something for a shade, when you say to yourself, you think to yourself, how in the world am I going to get around this shade? How am I going to get around this demon? How am I going to get around this thing and make sure that I do everything in the right way? Give something to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which you get no Hanah from whatsoever. You get no benefit. If you get no benefit out of it whatsoever, then it's guaranteed to go there and it'll knock out that guy by the name of Tzav that's in the end of this week's Parsha. I didn't tell him that answer. But had I done that, I'm sure I would have knocked him off. I'm sure that would have been the best answer ever. Anyway, that's the whole idea behind it. Now, yeah.
Sorry. I'll say after if you get to
that. Okay, we'll get. The Chassam Sofer asks, why do you do that over here? Rashi does start off, and by the way, it is a very easy Rashi. If anybody asks you what the first Rashi in Parshas Tzav is, Ein Tzav El Lashon Zrizus. Whenever it says the word Tzav, it tells you got to do something hurriedly. You got to do something in the best way, quickly, but in the best way. Not just in a haphazard, like, okay, go ahead and do it, whatever. It's got to be done in a good way, where you're really paying attention to what you're doing and doing it with Zrizus. It's got to be done in that way. It says, Omer Rabbi Shimon, Bi Yosef Tzarech HaKasu Lezarez, Vimalko Shesh Pokus on Kiss, at a place where there's a big loss of money, you got to be very, very careful, you got to do it in the right way. That's what Rashi says. And the reason why is by an Ola, you know what you got to bring for an Ola? I don't even know what Korban is brought as an Ola. It can't be a bird. It can't be a bird. It's either a sheep or a cow. Do you know how much cows cost? I need to check out the market on cows lately. $1,350 shekel, if you want to buy it in Israel. $1,350 shekel. If the Kohen messes it up, who pays for it? Who pays for that mess up?
You do.
You have to pay for it. You have to pay it all over again. The Cohen feels bad. He comes back and he says, I really feel sorry for this. I feel sorry about that. But the Cohen doesn't pay for it. You end up paying for it. You end up having to pay the guy back. You end up getting everything. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. It's one of the worst things in the world you can think of. And the guy's sitting there and he just lost all that money, 1,350 shek. You know, all that amount of money. And what does he get out of it? Absolutely nothing. You got to go buy another one. He can't even blame the Cohen. Because the Cohen's like, I'm sorry, I just couldn't concentrate the whole time. He can't get any money back from him. That's terrible for him. So what's the deal by this? By over there, we say, Rashi says, that's the time when you got to say, you got to have zrizus. Bring it, even though you know there might be a mess up. So the Chassam Sofer says an awesome thing. Why do we have Shacharis Minchan Maariv? Shacharis Minchan Maariv. We say because of the Korbanos, right? But we also say because of the Avos. So why do we have Shacharis? Shacharis is because of who? Avram Avinu. And what else? What Korban in Shacharis? The Tamid Shel Shacharis, right? What happened in the afternoon? Why do we have Mincha? What's the purpose of Mincha?
Tamid Shel Ben Arbaim.
Tamid Shel Ben Arbaim, and it's because of who?
Yitzchak,
right? Maariv. Why do we daven Maariv? Yaakov, and because of what? Not the Truma Zedeshen. The Eivarim and the Pedarim. The limbs and the fats that they burned on the Mizbeach. Now, the Tamid Shel Shacharis and the Tamid Shel Ben Arbaim, were you allowed to not give them? Were you allowed to just not bring them one day? You weren't allowed to. You have to bring them every single morning. The Eivarim and the Pedarim, the limbs and the fats, if you didn't want to burn them, do you have to burn them? Do you have to? No. If all the Kohanim were lazy one night, they also like, you know what, I don't feel like it. They all could just sit back, relax, and do absolutely nothing. They wouldn't have to do anything. They're allowed to just sit back, relax, and do absolutely nothing if they want to. They're allowed to just do that. That's a very cool concept, to just sit back, relax, and just do absolutely nothing. So, wait a second. Out of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who is the most showing? The perfect of the others. The guy who's the Mufchar Sheba Avos. The guy who is known as the chosen one among all of them.
Yaakov.
Why Yaakov? More than just that he was an Ishtam.
He didn't have any bad kids.
No bad kids. Avram had a little bit of Gaiva within him. That little tiny bit that he had within him gave him Yishmael. Yitzchak had a little bit within him. He got Esav. Yaakov didn't have a single kid. If you're a perfect person, then nothing bad will come out of you. Yaakov, you know, is the Muchar Shabavos, the Sholem among everybody. Why is his Korma not required? You'd think if he's the greatest one, his Korma would be the one that's required. His Korma would be the absolute greatest Korma that you could possibly give. That's going to the Korban in which we say, forget it, nobody else, it has to be done, and if you don't do it, you're in a lot of trouble. You would think that way. Why in the world is it the opposite way? More so. Chovas HaLevavos says there's two different types of thing of doing something. You do something because you want, I'm not going to give people examples by name. You wake up in the morning, and you put on tefillin. Are you doing it because you want to? Are you doing it because you have to, because your parents will scream at you if you don't do it? Well, doesn't apply by some people. Because you know you're going to have that Yiddish guilt within you if you don't put on tefillin in the morning. Are you doing it because you know you have to? And if you don't do it, you're going to think the rest of the day, oh, I wish I would have put on tefillin. This wouldn't have happened today if I would have put on tefillin. And that's how you would go through the entire day? Or do you put it on because I really, whenever I wake up in the morning, I wake up and I get out of bed and I'm like, yes, tefillin! It's the first thing that you say when you get out of bed. Which one is it? If it's the second way, Kol HaKavod, you're the holiest Jew I've ever seen before in my life. But for the rest of us, who get up in the morning and we say, okay, we have to put on tefillin because otherwise we're going to have that guilt. So how are we supposed to go about our lives that way? Chovas HaLevavos says that there are two different ways of doing it. The second way is by far, that's the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to live in the world. He wanted us to live in this world wanting to do things, not just doing them out of rote, out of habit, because we have to or whatever it is. Doing things because we really love doing them. How do you get to that point? How do you get to that? Yaakov Avinu was at the level where everything he did was out of pure love. When the Shvatim were around, it wasn't as great as when Yaakov was around. When Yaakov was around, all of Bnei Yisrael, all they had to do was look at Yaakov Avinu, and they felt a love for Torah, a crazy love for Torah, and they weren't able to leave anything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them to do. When the Shvatim were around, it was a little bit lower. They still couldn't do any Averos, but they didn't do it out of love. They started doing it out of rote habit. Because, okay, the Shvatim are around. As soon as the Shvatim died, the Bnei Yisrael and the Triumph started going down and down and down to the point where they started to sin. It started to go down, started to sin, and started doing all the terrible things. Because look, there was no one around to show them the greatest things. Now, I realize, today, you look around and you try to find people to look up to, it's hard. You try to get as close as you can to Revel Yashiv, and you get an elbow in the back, usually, by one of the Hasidim that are also trying to get in front of you. You try to get near Rav Scheinberg, and you can't even see him past the 70 pairs of tzitzis. You try to get around to any of the Gedolim around nowadays, the people that would make you be affected by them, and it's almost impossible to get anywhere near them. But there is a point to running toward them, trying to get a hold of them, writing to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, even though you know that 90% of the time he's not going to write you back. Trying to get, somehow getting a hold of Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg Zatzal, who nobody even knew that he wrote the Shel Sitchu with Sitz Eliezer. He just passed away. People just heard he passed away. They're like, oh my gosh, I thought he lived 150 years ago. People had no idea that this guy was still alive. To try to push yourself and get into these people, even the Gedolim that are just around Chicago, to try to go get up to Rav Eisenstein, or to Rabbi First, or to Rabbi Cohn, or to anybody like that, and try to get in, all of a sudden it might be, says the Chovos HaLevavos, that you'll be able to impress upon yourself to start doing the right thing, to start doing the good things that you know you're supposed to do. By Yaakov Inu, it wasn't a Pella. It wasn't a Pella that the one korban that he had, the Evarim and the Bedarim, the limbs and the fats that he brought, was only a Rishus. If you want to bring them, you can. If you don't want to bring them, you don't have to. Because at Yaakov Avinu, he never felt that it was a requirement. He always felt that he was doing it because I love doing this. He brought those limbs and those fats when he wanted to. He Bedavka brought them when he wanted to. He wanted to show everybody, I don't want it to be a Chiyuv. I don't want Mariv necessarily to be a Chiyuv. I want it to be that Mariv should be davened if you want to daven. We took it upon ourselves as a Chiyuv. But I want it to be that Mariv should only be davened if you really want to daven it. If you don't want to daven it, don't do it. Because that's what Yaakov's all about. He's about Shlemus, about love for doing all the things in the best way possible. That's what Yaakov is, a fully perfect person. And that's the reason why it says Tzav over here in this week's Parsha. By the Ola, again by the Ola, as we said by Rashi. What's the shot behind the Ola? The Ola is something which you're getting nothing out of. You are not gaining from it whatsoever. You're getting the skin, and that's it. You're getting nothing else out of it. And a thing like that in which you're gaining nothing, which you're getting nothing from it, at that point we say to you, okay, get some reasons for it. Love it. And if you really love it, you'll do it in the right way. If you don't love it, you're going to mess it up. Do it in the right way, and we tell you tzav. Not as in titzaveh, not as in a mitzvah, the lashon of tzav. It's rizus. Do this, but do it in the right way. Do it in the right way more than anything else. All right. Mokta. Anyway, I was sitting in a shul, in one of those Mizrahi shuls in Israel, where there are gorgeous, gorgeous shuls, but there's no svarim in there. And I overheard a guy talking right after laning was over. The guy said to another guy there, you guys remember it, the what's it called shul? The big octagon shul? You know what I'm talking about, Ari? The octagon shul in the middle of Ramada shul?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's the greatest shul in the world. By the way, it's the octagon. yeah, it looks like a spaceship. It goes up, what? Off of Paran. You seen it before? Yeah, it's an awesome place. That place is absolutely awesome. So anyway, I went down there. One guy asked the other guy, why? By the, you know where it is?
I lived there for a year and a half.
I'm sorry. Okay, so over here, when you go into the parsha, it says, where is the mokda? Mokda on these ba'akol laila ad boker. It says, I'm sorry, in the second pasuk, zos torasa ola hi ola al mokda al mis ba'akol laila, on the fire, on the ola, on his back all night long until the morning. Mokda, the men, is a very, very small men. It's written small in the Chumash. So I heard one guy say to the other guy, why is the men small? Why is the men small? So I sat there and I'm like, oh my gosh, I remember this vort. I remember this vort, and I couldn't remember where it is. There were no svarim inside the shul. It's never like that. But it's a svas emes. I ended up looking it up. I spent the whole morning trying to look up this thing. It was right around the time of tzav, so I was off the yeshiva. I spent the next like 2.5 hours looking up every sefer that I could to try to find where I had seen before that there's a little mem by Mokta. It's a svas emes. It's the greatest vort in the world. The Mokta, the fire on the Mizbeach, stands for Islavos. Sometimes you can see the fire of somebody learning. If you ever go, if you ever have a chance to go to Eretz Yisrael again and look inside the mirror based medrash, at one point, somewhere in that mirror based medrash, there's going to be one guy screaming at his chavrusa. It could be any time during the night. Any time. It could be all the way from 5 in the morning until 4 in the morning, and then, you know, all the way in the middle of the night. It could be any time during that time, you will see a guy screaming at his chavrusa. I have a story that one time I got so angry at my chavrusa that I tried grabbing the pen out of his hand, but instead I pushed downward instead of up. I was that upset, and up stabbing in the middle of the hand. He like yelled out, ah, screamed. Wouldn't learn with me ever again. I don't blame him. But the fact is, there's an anger within there. The Gemara in Tainus actually quotes down that if you see a Talmud Chacham that gets angry, it's not him that's angry. It's the Torah within him that's angry. I like to blame that on the Torah within me. But yeah, we know it's anger. But it's the anger that you see from one guy. It's not a real anger which you hate, because as soon as they finish learning, they're just like, all right, I'll see you tomorrow. Yeah, I'll see you tomorrow. They end up, you know, coming back to one another. But there's an anger there while they're learning to try to get the pshat down. The Mokta because the slava is the love for Torah that's within the person, the fire that's within that person that's trying to show itself, that's bringing itself out, that's saying you just want to get the right pshat. You want to show the right pshat. You want to know what the real pshat is in the Torah. But the mem is small. Why? So he brings down a Gemara in Sukkah. Hillel had 80 Talmidim that were his greatest Talmidim. Out of the top 30, so the top 30 could stand the sun in the middle of the sky like Moshe Rabbeinu. The bottom 30 were able to, they were geniuses, beyond geniuses, whatever it is. The middle 20, the greatest of those middle 20 is Yonasan ben Uziel. The lowest of those 20 is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. We know Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the leader of Jewry right afterward. So you know, we're talking about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is the lowest of the 20, and there were still 50 guys ahead of him, and yet he became the leader of the Jews. But those are the people by Hillel. They say about Yonasan ben Uziel in the Gemara that when he used to learn, any bird that flew over his head would burn up. It would burn up in a fire, and the smoke would go up to Shemayim. Any bird that would fly over his head. So they ask, this is what the Rishonim ask, so what was by Hillel? Did he have like airplanes going over his head that were burning up in fire? What did he have that was going over his head that he was able to burn up? What was it? What did Hillel do? So what do they answer? The answer is, when Hillel learned, the bird didn't burn up. The bird didn't burn up. I'm like that. Except there's a difference. Hillel could burn the bird above his head. He could have burned it, but he was able to withhold that ish, keep it inside him, keep it within him, so that the bird wouldn't burn on top of his head. He had the ish, but he's able to knock it down and not show it, so that on the outside he looked like a normal person, but on the inside he was crazy. Crazy. There was just this raging fire within him, but he was able to hold it back to the point where we know Hillel and Shammai with those Gemaras and Shabbos and Daf Lamed, where all those guys go to Hillel and they try to learn, I want to learn Torah standing on one foot. I want to learn the Aleph and go all those Gemaras, in which Hillel said, please my son, listen. And he's all so nice and everything. On the inside, he's thinking to himself, I'm going to kill this guy. But on the outside, he's saying to himself, whatever you need, I'll be able to do. You guys know that Gemara where two guys get into a fight with one another? And can you get Hillel angry? So one of the guys says, he goes up to him and he says, why do the Babylonians have round heads? Why do the Africans have large feet? Why do these people have this and whatever it is here? He also asks all these stupid questions on Erev Shabbos while Hillel is shampooing his hair and everything, and he's doing everything, and he comes out and he's answering everything. I'm telling you, by the third time, I don't think there's anybody in this room that wouldn't have slapped them in the face and just been like, please, just get out of here. I just don't want to talk to you anymore. But Hillel was able to hold himself back and say, listen, I understand what you're asking. Let me answer you. That's the mokta. It's a mokta. It's a fire on the inside, but it's a small mem. He was able to be, what's the word? Memayit it. He was able to decrease it to the point where on the outside, it didn't look like anything. On the inside, it was a raging fire. It was a raging fire that was going crazy within him that wanted to go out. That's what it says by Yonasan ben Uziel. There's a couple more things about that. Why don't we eat dam? Why can't we drink blood? Why can't you drink blood? I know this is a weird question because you think to yourself, oh, it's disgusting. But it's really quite nutritious. I mean, it's one of those things that's extremely nutritious. So why don't we drink it? What? Iron content. There is quite a bit of iron in there. There's a lot of stuff inside there. So why aren't we allowed to drink it? Or why not blood? So the easy answer is that the only thing that was matured to Bnei Noach was basar, was meat. But the dam wasn't matured. I don't know if we're going to get to Parsha Shemini. There's a big machlokus in Parsha Shemini whether human beings are mutter to eat or not. Now, obviously, you can't do it after they're dead. After they're dead, there's tumah involved. You can't eat something that's tameh. That's another thing altogether. So you can't eat something that's tameh, so you can't eat human beings after they're dead. Question is, can you eat a live human being? Can you eat Avram Min HaChai from a human being? Because Avram Min HaChai only applies by an animal. Does it apply by a human being? The Rambam says there's an Isser Aseh. The Ramban says it's mutter. And not preferred. But it's mutter. It's mutter. You can do it. That's my focus between the Rambam and the Ramban. Now, there's quite a bit too that the Miyam Lois says. The Miyam Lois quotes down a raya for the Rambam that there should be an Isser Aseh because the only thing that was mattered for Noach to eat was meat. Anything that wasn't mattered for him after Noach came out of the Teva, Hashem said you're allowed to eat the meat from now on. Now you can have the animals. You weren't allowed to have people. He didn't matur up people. So too, he never matured up the blood. He only matured up the buser, but he never matured up the blood. That's the whole thing. By the way, the result of this machlokas Rambam and Ramban, it's interesting. According to the Ramban, if you're sitting in a boat and there's a pig and a live person sitting with you on the boat, which should you eat? According to the Ramban, you'd have to eat the human being before you eat the pig. There actually is a nafkamina la halacha, which I spoke about at my first kid's bris, at Ezi's bris, that I was hoping that nobody would really be paying attention, because who listens during a bris? But of course, since it was my kid's bris, everybody was paying attention because they're waiting for the weirdest word that they've ever heard before in their lives. So I gave it to him. This is Shalos Hatshuvos Rosh Bash. This Shalos Hatshuvos Rosh Bash is very, very little known, but he brings down a minhug that they used to have, that women who weren't able to have baby boys, who were just having baby girls, they used to eat the orla of the mohel, of the mila, the bris mila. They would eat the orla, and that would be a skula to have a baby boy. It was a guaranteed skula to have a baby boy. So they asked, I don't know how they did it, but I really don't know how they did it, but they asked, how is that mutter? You're eating a human being. You're eating part of a human being. So how is that mutter? It's Eivor Min HaChai. Literally, it's Eivor Min HaChai. So the Rashbash goes through this whole machlok, as he quotes on a Rashba and Ksuvah Zdaf Samach. The sugi is on Ksuvah Zdaf Samach, by the way. That's where the whole sugi is about Basar Mahalchish Dayim, flesh of a human being or even a monkey, basically. It's anything that walks on 2 feet, whether you can eat it or not. So he goes through that, and in the end, he quotes down the Rashba, quotes down everything, and he ends up saying, it's, according to the Ramban, it's mutter. So according to the Ramban, you'd be able to have this minhag of eating the orla in order to have a baby boy. Again, it's not preferred. Nobody's going to say that this is a lechachila sort of a thing, where like, hey, you know what we should do tonight? That's not going to be one of those things. But if you come into a situation where it's sakana, and there's nothing to eat except for the fellow human being that's in your boat, and a pig, then it's better to be over on the, well, nothing, than to be over on the lav. Again, this might be a bit of a chalashan. It could be a lot of issues involved over here. Let's not worry about that, but whatever. Yeah, that's already another question also, whether we pasna like the Rashba. There's a lot of stuff about that, but since we're there, we might as well bring down mummies. What about mummies? Are you allowed to have something from mummies? This is a very, very crazy Mishnah Lamelech. The Mishnah Lamelech is in Hilchos Avil, Perik Yudalad, Alacha Chafala. He goes into a whole Arichos, are you allowed to sell mummies? Are you allowed to sell mummies to museums or get them from museums? Are you allowed to buy and sell mummies? The reason why it's bad is because it's a dead human being. You can't get any hana from a dead human being. There's a tuma involved. You can't get any hana from it. You're not allowed to benefit from it. So when it comes to mummies, are you allowed to get benefit from them or not? Are mummies considered like human beings or not? Are they considered like regular people or not? So he goes through a whole long thing. He says that the Ra'ah, the Rashba, and the Ritva all Asrid. He says he's Yerushalmi and Shabbos. It seems to matter it. It seems to matter going ahead and doing it. He ends up Asring it. Even if it's mutter to eat human beings, even according to that Ramban, not so. After death, it's completely usher. After death, you can't get any hana from it. He says it's completely usher. However, the Radvaz in Siman Tuf Kuf Ayin Tes, I was just looking it up, 979. It's one of the craziest Radvazes I've ever seen. That Radvaz says, no, it's mutter to sell them, mutter to buy them. Not only that, mutter to eat them l'kuli alma. Why? Because mummies turned into dust. There's nothing left. There's nothing left by them. They're all dust. Since it's all dust, you're not eating anything. It's like eating a bug after it already turned to dust. After it's already dust, it's dust in the earth. It's like taking dirt and putting it inside your mouth. Mistama, any dirt that you pick up off the ground is a dead bug. There has been a dead bug inside there. Some dead bug went inside there and whatever. When you're eating it, it's a dead bug. There's no isser in eating dirt. It's, again, not preferred, but there's no isser behind it. So too, any time, not only would it be mutter to sell or to do business with mummies or anything like that, 100% it would be mutter to eat them. And the big reason why it was a big problem is, can you use it as bandages? Because apparently there's something, the linen that they use in the mummification process of mummies was well known in the times of the Radvaz, that if you use that mummified bandages and you put it on a wound, it immediately stops bleeding. Apparently that's what worked back then, and they knew about it back then. However, the Radvaz says you gotta watch out, because he knows of a ship that was traveling with 300 mummies inside it, and the entire ship collapsed and fell into the sea, because the mummies have a power even after death to punish the people that use them even afterwards. We spoke about that in Parshas Vayechi. Yeah.
Back to the eating humans thing.
Yeah.
How could that be kosher if someone has to split hooves and chew its cud?
It's only by an animal that you need to split hooves and chewing the cud. But by a person, who says you need it?
What does the Torah say? Like an animal specifically? Like it says these are you. It doesn't say these are allowed to eat.
Check out Parshas Shemini and Parshas Re'eh. Both times it says Esa Behema, Zos HaBehema Asher Tochelu. This is the animal that you should eat. It doesn't exclude a human being. Oh, I'm sorry?
Why is a monkey not considered a behemoth?
Oh, when I said monkey and ape and Mahalchish Dayim, it's being a little facetious over there. But, yeah, that's. We won't go into that right now.
Why is a mummy considered dust?
Because it's nothing anymore.
They have unraveled and they had bodies.
It's not a real body. You can crumble it up. You can... take off the arm, and you'll see it's completely dust. There's nothing there. There's no blood. There's no anything. It's just dust. It has the same tzura. It looks like a person. It looks like a person, but it's all dust. There's nothing there. It's part of the mummification process to make the guy into dust. Yeah, I mean, just try it. Next time you see a mummy, you know, just go up to it. Just, like, crack it off. You'll see. Yeah, it's 100%. It's all dust.
A mummy is not a
Kohen
can go to somewhere where there's
mummies on. Nah, that's a big machlokas. Don't ask me that question. But yeah. No issue before the Malamut. That's all quite of human beings. No, because even then there was no Heter to eat anything before the Malamut. Even then you'd still have the problem of what's going to be before the Malamut. All right, there's another reason why you can't eat the dam. Dam is also supposed to be used in a bad way. None of this has been in a good way up until now. But dam is also used in a bad way. It's supposed to be the chiyus of the animal. The life of the animal is all within the blood of the animal. So thus, when you eat the animal and you drink its blood, you're taking that chiyus of the animal and putting it within you. You know why you can't just have snacks all day long? Why you can't just eat candy and you can't have all that sugar all day long? Because it affects you, right? If you just keep drinking coffee or cappuccino or anything, you're just going to go crazy because the caffeine is going to end up making you nuts. It's going to make you absolutely crazy. So too, you can't just down as much sugar as you want. It affects you. It affects you on the inside. Physically, it destroys you. It completely destroys your system, and you'll just randomly start screaming as soon as you're walking the street. You're like, ah! Just be walking and screaming because the caffeine affects you that much. It's the exact same thing regarding the blood. The blood will make you do things that you never would have done otherwise. It makes you into an animal. Whatever type of an animal that you're drinking the blood from, that's the type of the thing that you'll become. You drink animal, if you drink lion blood, you'll become like a lion. If you drink ox blood, you'll become like an ox. All of these things, whatever you have, it's going to make you into that one, it's going to make you into that animal. It's a terrible, terrible thing. And the last reason is because dam is used as a korban. Dam is a korban. Who do you bring dam as a korban to? You bring it over to Shadim. I don't know if anybody's done this before. I haven't. But there has been, and we'll end off with this, the dam is used for Shadim. You put the dam in a certain kli, they dance around it, they have a good time, and you're able to tell the future from that blood. We'll go into that next time. But for now, we're going to stop with this, guys. Shkoyach, have a good Shabbos.